Adam here from Day One. Just a quick message from one of our sponsors. Standard Ledger is your trusted partner for end-to-end financial support. They provide core accounting services plus expert financial guidance when you're ready to scale. Whether you need help with bookkeeping, payroll, R&D, or even fractional CFO services, their team supports founders across Australia to manage finances, raise capital, and grow their businesses. Visit dayone.fm/standard today to book your free chat. Let me tell you about our partner, Teamified. If you need to build a top-notch team quickly, Teamified is your go-to solution. They not only provide fractional CTOs, they can also do contractors and even remote team members tailored exactly to your needs. And whether you're looking for expertise in the Philippines, India, or Sri Lanka, Teamified has you covered. What's amazing is that Teamified uses a blend of AI and human expertise to cut hiring times by 50%. Their platform handles everything from automated onboarding to day-to-day management and even performance tracking. You can also handle rewards and recognition, buy equipment and order training all through their platform. Simplify your hiring process and get the best talent fast with Teamified. Check them out now and transform your team. Go to dayone.fm/teamified. That's dayone.fm/TEAMIFIED and get started today. Hi, I'm Adam Spencer, founder of the Day One Network, which is bringing the history of the Australian startup ecosystem to you. I believe in founders. It's why I do everything I do at Day One and our media company, W2D1 Media. And that's why the Day One Network exists, to create helpful content for founders. We've got some great shows in development, but a large part of what we do couldn't be done without support from our partners and sponsors. And I couldn't be happier than to be working with NTP, who get community better than any other technology recruitment company out there. A Newcastle company like mine, NTP are invested in seeing the growth of the local tech community in Newcastle, Sydney, and more broadly Australia. So thank you, NTP, for helping us bring helpful content to founders and the startup community in Australia. Back to the interview. Hi, I'm Adam Spencer, founder of the Day One Network, which is bringing the history of the Australian startup ecosystem to you. I believe in founders. It's why I do everything I do at Day One and our media company, W2D1 Media. And that's why the Day One Network exists, to create helpful content for founders. We've got some great shows in development, but a large part of what we do couldn't be done without support from our partners and sponsors. And I couldn't be happier than to be working with NTP, who get community better than any other technology recruitment company out there. A Newcastle company like mine, NTP are invested in seeing the growth of the local tech community in Newcastle, Sydney, and more broadly Australia. So thank you, NTP, for helping us bring helpful content to founders and the startup community in Australia. Back to the interview. Hi, I'm Adam Spencer, and welcome to Day One, the podcast that spotlights Australian startups, founders, and the organizations that empower Australian entrepreneurship. We go back to the beginning to tell the story of Australia's most inspiring founders and how they built their companies. You're listening to a special interview series as part of a documentary W2D1 is producing about the history of the Australian startup ecosystem. On the episode today, we have...
Hi, I'm Les Dollarforce. I'm a Goombangan Dangari man from the mid-north coast of New South Wales originally. I'm the Indigenous Entrepreneurship Director at Mindaroo Foundation Generation 1, and I've been involved in the startup ecosystem for the last 6 to 8 years. So from raising capital with startups to scaling, exiting, and everything in between.
Can you tell me a bit about the work that Mindaroo does?
Yeah, sure. Mindaroo Foundation was established by our co-chairs, Andrew and Nicola Forrest. And there's a range of initiatives that we try and tackle, global problems and challenges. That could be from walk free, which is eradicating modern slavery, to removing plastics from the ocean. And in the area I work in is Generation One. And our mountaintop, effectively, our goal is to create employment parity within four Indigenous Australians within one generation. So from my startup background, it's a weird transition into a big not-for-profit like this and why. And it's the team I lead is purely around Indigenous entrepreneurship. How we create the opportunities for Indigenous startups to thrive and survive and be successful?
I'd love to go deeper on that, and we might a little bit in the interview down the road, but if we don't, I'd love to do another interview with you outside of this kind of innovation ecosystem series that I'm doing.
Yeah, for sure, man. Yeah, absolutely.
So when did you first get involved in the startup ecosystem?
When I first got involved, it was around the 2014 mark thereabouts. And at the time, I was working for the WA public sector. So I had moved across from New South Wales all the way to Perth, and Perth reminded me of my own hometown, Port Macquarie. And at that time, I was a little bit disenfranchised and seeing some of the challenges that people experience trying to gain employment within the public sector. And it was based purely on technical skills. So for us as a colleague and I went, let's just flip it on its head. Let's try and build a startup where we could recruit based on values. So Google at that stage just introduced their recruiting algorithms. And there's a lot of controversy around, can algorithms recruit better than humans? So it was around that 2015 mark, we jumped in, built a set of algorithms, built a little startup, went through a myriad of challenges, and then eventually raised capital a couple of years later.
So what were we, 2014, 2015? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Western Australia, what is the ecosystem in terms of community size, you know, organizations around support? What did the landscape look like around 2014, 2015?
The landscape was still evolving. It was a few years before that. It was quite immature, really, really quite new, but it was really led by Spacecube over here, one of the major co-working spaces. Definitely led by that, and that created a lot of buzz in the town. At that time, we had a really big lull in mining. And so this is obviously a massive mining state. But right at the time, it was HR tech was booming. So we were in the right place, right time with our startup. But it was a period of time where, like, post GFC, iron ore price crashed. And obviously, as did mining royalties, but there's a lot of investors in WA, a lot of high net worth investors. So they're looking at placing their funds elsewhere. And at the time, interestingly, you saw a lot of backdoor listings. So rather than raising capital through angels or even VC, startups are going straight to backdoor listings, which is unbelievable. They go to West Perth and meet with an investor or a firm that it would provide them with a mandate about listing on the ASX. And it was the point in time where I think startups, I wouldn't say ruined it, but it made it a lot more challenging. We had seen startups like OnePage back in the day, Refined, another one, but also the talk of the town back then was definitely Theranos. Like right now, looking at Theranos, the challenges that they're going through legally, Theranos, the buzz was everywhere. Everywhere you'd see, you'd read, it was about Theranos. So it was, the trends were definitely backdoor listings for startups and going straight to IPO, to listing on the stock exchange, which is an interesting time. Then the ASX changed their listing mandate.
What, as outside of Space Cubed, were there any other kind of big support or co-working spaces or other support organizations, or was it kind of, they were the main game in town?
Yeah, predominantly they were the main players in town. And they started around that 2011 mark. And really, and just a couple of desks in an old bank safe from Westpac. So they were certainly one of the leaders over here. There were a few smaller co-working spaces. But look, as of today, you look around today, there's from WeWork to Tankstream Labs. Yeah. And then all of the very smaller co-working spaces all spread out, because WA is the largest or most spread out capital city in the world. So there's a lot of land mass over here. And we're seeing a lot of other co-working spaces in the likes of Geraldton or the Southwest and Busselton and locations like that. But Spacecube were definitely the pioneers.
This is a bit of a side question. So, you know, if you don't want to answer it, that's fine. But you've mentioned Spacecube 2011. People have, you know, we've got Fishburners on the East Coast in Sydney, 2012, River City Labs, 2012, 2013 in Brisbane. It seems, yeah, is it a coincidence or not that all of these big co-working spaces popped up at around the same time? And do you think they were a catalyst to help things move along, or was there a thing that prompted them? And what was that thing that prompted all these co-working spaces to pop up, do you think?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and certainly I did a bit of work for Tankstream Labs over here in Perth and established that business in Perth a few years ago, and obviously new market entrants, and then you have WeWork entering the space. But around that time, it was really popularized by the 4-Hour Work Week, and everywhere you'd see, everyone was reading that book back then. And I was probably, I wouldn't say one of the last, but I was just like, the title didn't grab me. And then I read it on a flight heading back home to New South Wales, and that drew me in. And it felt like around the time where Tim Ferriss' podcast was then starting to blow up, 4-Hour Work Week was out there then, and all these co-working spaces were all just starting to pop up. And I guess based on a lot of podcasts from Silicon Valley. And I think it was really driven across the country, really around the same time, whether it's Fish Burners and York Butter Factory and Space Cube and Tankstream Labs. It was almost at this point in time, this natural transition into co-working spaces, and it's really grown rapidly. Obviously, COVID has impacted that sector massively, but seeing some of those really transition out and looking at other different business models as well.
So jumping ahead to present day, I'd love to go back a bit more and talk about that kind of what happened between 2015 to present and how you've observed things change over that time. But for the moment, what are some of the gaps present day that you observe in the ecosystem?
Some of the gaps, I think talent is widely distributed, but opportunity is not. So the talent gap is a significant challenge for a lot of startups. So where you've got some incredible capital raises from the likes of Canberra most recently, was it 50% of their staff were employed last year and predominantly developers, it's really hard to find devs. Like it's one of Australia's most amazing successes, them and Atlassian in the startup sector. But the talent piece is really hard. So in WA in particular, trying to find developers and quality developers with experience is really quite hard, particularly in the crypto blockchain space as well. And being in that area since 2017, early 2017, end of 2016, seeing that even more so now with this another resurgence of crypto. So where you've got talent across the country is really widely distributed. Opportunity is not necessarily. So for a lot of different diverse groups. And that's the exciting thing we're seeing now around Airtree, their Explorer program, or Start Mate with First Believers. Some of the programs that we're trying to run is leveling the playing field for diverse groups where they can access startups. Like for me, being born in Kempsey, I was raising capital with an Indigenous background. The challenges that we face are lack of intergenerational wealth, access to networks, access to capital. And then there I was in 2017 raising capital in Sydney, Martin Place, with VC firms, and having not done this before, it's certainly an understanding how to go through this. I think now we're seeing a lot of programs in place to support that, and particularly people with diverse backgrounds, whether like women, Aboriginal people, people of colored backgrounds, and people with disabilities. But then still trying to access the right talent in a massive geographical landmass across the country as well. So COVID certainly, I think, helped with that as well, where when we were raising capital, we would have to fly every second or third day, Sydney, Melbourne, Singapore, just to raise capital. Now we can just take video conferencing.
Again, speaking about challenges, you listed off a couple there, but what are some unique, just out of curiosity, I've got Aboriginal ancestry, and I'm curious to understand, what are some of the unique challenges that you're seeing the people that you're helping face?
Yeah, that's a really good question. That's pretty much my entire role to help overcome some of those pretty significant challenges. Starting off, we would, for Aboriginal people, those three key factors were probably the most critical. So we in Mindaroo Foundation Gen 1, we launched a report earlier this year, and we went out to hundreds of Aboriginal entrepreneurs across the country. We had focus groups across the country. We commissioned a report into Indigenous entrepreneurship. And what came out of that was the lack of networks, or the access to networks, access to capital, financial literacy, and lack of intergenerational wealth. So for example, for a lot of Aboriginal people that have come from nothing, growing up in Kempsey, you didn't necessarily have much. But once you got a job, you'd hold on to it because you don't know what's going to happen next. And that lack of intergenerational wealth, then to take a risk and throw it all in for a startup is for a lot of Agile people is very unlikely. So for me over here, and I'm fortunate with the background of my family that, you know, took risks and had a solid foundation for us, flying across to WA and then throwing in a full-time public sector job. At the time when we were raising capital and my wife was 6 months pregnant, there was no salary for 12 months at that stage, but the team, we believed in what we were building, and we were 2 weeks away from losing everything, and we eventually raised capital and we made it, but it was just through hard work and perseverance through those three key things. If we had those networks, and we see this quite a lot, where non-Indigenous startups, not all, but some would have some networks and typically access family and friends around, but we don't necessarily have. So there's a number of barriers, and that's why there's a big focus, not just for us. There's a lot of different programs out there supporting Agile entrepreneurs, how to become investor ready or ready to invest. And certainly that's what I experienced, especially looking around going, I'm raising capital with all these VCs. I've never done this before back in the day, but who can I talk to? What other Agile person has raised venture capital? And couldn't find anyone. Mm. So we didn't realize at the time we were one of the first Indigenous startups to raise venture capital. And then eventually it's imparting our knowledge onto the next generation.
Another quick side question. Talking about support out there for Aboriginal founders or Indigenous founders, what apart from Mindaroo, can you list off a few, like what places can people go to?
Yeah, absolutely. There's some amazing groups out there. It's really driven by three levels. One at a grassroots level, so from the likes of Indigitech over in Sydney, definitely focus on tech-based and STEM roles within the startup ecosystem. They do an amazing job in Sydney, but also moving to Melbourne. Then you've also got like the co-working spaces that are shifting into gear now. You've got with the Wirra Hub over here in WA. You've got the Yarb Hub, New South Wales Indigenous Chamber of Commerce. Also, Kinaway do an amazing job. Then at the university sector, you've got a number of programs. RMIT have Nagami, Melbourne Business School have Murra Masterclass, and I was an alumni of the Murra Masterclass. But it was just, we're seeing definitely three levels, but it's been driven predominantly by this grassroots approach for Indigenous entrepreneurship.
What are some of the areas that you think we're doing as a community really well in? And maybe also what makes our ecosystem, if you can comment on this, what makes our ecosystem unique compared to other ecosystems that maybe you've observed?
I think community, the focus on community at a macro level from that Australian level, that the community that we have, we really stick together. We find in the corporate space that it's extremely competitive. Whereas in the startup ecosystem, you see a lot of complementary support between startups and founders. The other thing I think we're doing really well, and it's only been the last 12, probably 18 months, it's been really incredible to see these new venture funds that are popping up. So typically, to get into venture capital, you've got to have a large exit or have networks in the sector. However, seeing the rise of like AlphaWorks, Tractor Ventures, or Flying Fox, there's this unique growth that's occurring across the country and forming those syndicates and venture capital funds where people with that experience can get into investing into startups. Obviously, a challenge is being the sophisticated investor. The asset test is a massive challenge, and it's been widely publicized. But even over here, the programs we ran with the Indigenous prospective Indigenous angels, the group, the 12 of those angels went, let's form the Black Angels. Let's form our own angel group, and let's invest in the next generation of Indigenous startups coming through. So I think that's really quite unique, and it's really amazing to see where a lot of young people, not just young, but people want to get into venture capital. But then there's those barriers, and then you're starting to see like the likes of Tractor Ventures and Flying Fox breaking down those barriers. It's really incredible to see.
What do you think young people are attracted to that? Why they want to get involved in venture capital?
I think a big reason is how, and it might sound silly and just completely left field, is house prices. There's an amazing article recently in Sydney Morning Herald about young people, particularly in Sydney or in Melbourne, but in particular Sydney, trying to enter the housing market and the average price of a house. So young people then forming together syndicates and then investing in startups as that opportunity, as that asset to move forward. So where they could be priced out of Sydney in the housing market, they can move to a regional location, work on the startup, but also pull their money together and invest in startups to have that asset where a house might be out of reach.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. So this question, it's written down. I don't know if you have an answer for this, but do you have an unpopular opinion about the startup, anything in the startup ecosystem that people just aren't on the same page?
Certainly. I think it's almost state by state. So the unpopular opinion is definitely raising capital in WA is hard. It's really split down the line in Western Australia around if you're a decent startup, you will raise capital. But there's still, I think it's still extremely hard to raise capital in WA. There's a variety of reasons, but Sydney, Melbourne is still far easier to raise capital. We lose a lot of founders that are moving over east, and my other role with on the board of Startup WA is then how do we retain the talent in WA and without all the founders moving to either Sydney or Melbourne and Brisbane including. But while WA has significant capital available for early stage businesses, they're not startups. They're predominantly junior mining exploration companies. And asking other companies like some of the big four, why? Like, why is this? WA likes to take risks, but it's predominantly in mining, and mining is a 100-year-old sector. But people really know. But the thing is that one feedback was that you can price a ton of iron ore, but it's hard to price an early stage startup. It's also tangible. Iron ore is tangible, whereas a SaaS startup is quite intangible. And so that's probably an unpopular opinion about raising capital in WA. I still think it is hard. It is getting a little bit better, but we can certainly learn from New South Wales, the Sydney Startup Hub, and also LaunchVic in Victoria, that the role of government plays as an enabler.
What do you think about the role of government in the startup ecosystem? Are you for it or against it or in the middle somewhere?
I'm definitely in the middle. It's having worked in the public sector and worked for government for 8 years, and I can certainly see how government can stifle innovation, and innovation certainly happens outside of government without a doubt. And even with my startup, I had to leave the public sector, but government plays a role as an enabler. So you look at the funding New South Wales state government's provided Sydney Startup Hub, or Victoria, the state government has provided LaunchVic, is massive, and that could create significant change. And you're seeing some incredible progress and programs and projects and outcomes in Victoria and obviously in New South Wales. We are getting a little bit better, but because this state has focused predominantly on mining, tech and innovation has sort of dwindled a little bit in terms of startups, like not in the mining industry. You got automation, technology is massive, but in particularly in WA, we're certainly seeing a lot more support. And at Startup WA, thanks to the state government, we're running a number of programs for regional founders, female founders, and Indigenous founders as well, like trying to keep this talent here and grow that ecosystem. But it should be an enabler, but not getting in the way of innovation. And if we look at an example, cryptocurrency back in 2016-17, three regulatories, Commonwealth government regulatory bodies couldn't agree on what crypto was. Was it a property? Was it a security, for example? So it's certainly an enabler and a decent enabler.
What attracts you to this startup ecosystem, to founders?
That's a really good question. And particularly, we've just closed a massive program with 100 founders going through our Dream Venture Masterclasses. What attracts me? For me, it's the camaraderie. You don't have to, I was always interested in getting into politics when I was in government, but you don't have to play politics in startups. Like in government, obviously that's what it is. It's politics. It's, you know, it's getting involved in the politics. And that wasn't me. My values didn't really align there. My values align more in the startup ecosystem, where it's all about collaboration. And having exited my startup a few years ago and then building the Tankstream Labs business over here in WA, and seeing all of these new startups coming on board, helping each other out, learning from each other, how they can scale. Like a lot of these startups were just working on the sniff of an oily rag. Some made it, some, and a lot failed, obviously. But seeing that camaraderie and people sticking together as a team, it just felt, it sounds weird, but it felt like the Indigenous community. It felt like being a part of mob. It felt like, you know, you're a part of something, you're a part of this movement. And it was really quite powerful to be part of that movement.
Was it, did you want to get involved in politics to affect change?
Absolutely. Yeah. Coming from Kempsey, it was my parents made some big choices to provide a, you know, a stable environment for us as kids, my sister and I. And it was, and well, how do we, it was always taught about giving back, like giving back to community. And it was just getting involved with, in working in government, getting, and then looking at getting involved with politics is how do we create change for everyone and really level that playing field. But what I found working in the public sector is really, you know, driven by the government of the day, understandably. And so to come up with new ideas could be quite challenging and would take time. Whereas what I've found when leaving the public sector, if you've got an idea, like you've got now the tools, the technology, you don't need like a $15,000 server in a back room where you can just, you've got AWS now, you can really scale ideas and execute on ideas. So seeing that from the startup sector to Minderoo, you've got an idea, let's go for it. Let's try it, and not being afraid of failure as well.
Yeah, I interviewed Steve Baxter last week, and he said he thinks that being a founder, being an entrepreneur is one of the highest callings in life because you can really affect change.
Yep.
You can really have a, you know, a direct effect on the world with us, with your business. And I agree with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I see some of the participants coming through the master just recently. It's just... Yeah, you know, it just sounds like it's the Dream Venture Masterclasses, Indigenous entrepreneurs going through one side, Indigenous prospective Indigenous angels going through the other side. And then you've got, there's a live simulation pitch at the end, and with the amazing support, you know, the Googles and Microsoft and Blackbird, AirTree, StartMate, et cetera. But in the process though, you've got, you're listening to people's stories, these Aboriginal founders' stories. And we had, it was, I think it was the Melbourne pitch night. There were 3 out of the 9 pitches. All burst into tears. It was just, and then everyone on the call, like what these founders went through, and then the perseverance, the resilience, and the building a business. And that business then, that startup was that catalyst then to show all their family and all other mob out there that you can do this. Look at the hell that, you know, as in, now you've gone through, and to come out the other side to have a successful business. And that was their calling. Like it was just to see 20, 30 other, and blokes as well, bursting their tears on the call. It was just, it gives you tingles down your spine to go, this is the change that we're creating. Like this is just, it is really powerful to be a part of just, not, you know, the startup movement, but to see some of the change that we're creating.
What advice, given all the founders you've, you know, seen and helped and seen at these pitch events, like what advice would you give them?
Certainly, perseverance and not being afraid to go full-time into your startup. Like it's, I've found that there's a lot of founders that sit on the sidelines, and understandably, you know, you need some income coming in, but taking that risk and jumping straight into it. And it's the hours. Like the only way you're going to do that is pulling the hours and obviously getting out there, networks, building your networks. You got the Sydney Startup Hub, obviously with the Tankstream Labs and Fish Burners and Stone and Chalk in there to build relationships and networks. Getting out, getting amongst, joining up, whether it's going to launch programs, Startup WA, for example, but taking that risk. If you've got that idea, you've got an opportunity right now where technology can play a significant role, is then jumping full-time into it once you've got some traction and then absolutely going for it.
I've got a question here, which you'll see on your sheet too. It's what has been a recent development in the startup world that you think has been a really big deal? But if we kind of shift that question a bit too, because we didn't really just talk much about the kind of, you know, when did you say you moved over to Western Australia? Was it
12 years ago?
Yeah. So what's, you know, maybe a big broad sweeping change or set of smaller changes that have affected the ecosystem that you've observed over the last 12 years?
Oh, that's a really good question. I wouldn't say it'd be regulation or wouldn't be driven by government. It'd be driven by more of a grassroots movement. It'd definitely be the development of these local venture capital funds. And like a few of them have started, like After Work ventures have started over here in WA, local angel groups as well, building their syndicates to access some of these deals. Predominantly, even when I started in 2015-16, it felt like, you know, as a high net worth, you could just go to 708s or sophisticated investors to seek investment. I think now there were really two things. Crowdfunding is really starting to level the playing field, and particularly Indigenous startups. There was one last week raised $1 million for a non-alcoholic Indigenous beer, the $10 million valuation. So crowdfunding has really leveled the playing field and shone a light on startups.
Sorry, they raised $1 million through crowdfunding?
Yep.
Wow.
Yep. So Sobar, an Indigenous non-alcoholic beer, raised $1 million just recently on Birchall, on one of the platforms, crowdfunding platforms. But to see a lot of other Aboriginal business owners and entrepreneurs then invest in the in Sobar was really quite refreshing. From an Indigenous side, the Indigenous procurement policy has been one massive thing. There's been an injection of $4 billion into the Indigenous business ecosystem. So you've got a lot of successful Indigenous business owners, but the startup equity investment side has just really plateaued, and it's only recently become a nascent sector, but now starting to rapidly grow. So from the Indigenous side, it's definitely the Indigenous procurement policy. And now this rapid growth of Indigenous startups coming through, from high growth emerging tech to more standard traditional businesses, from fashion, retail, mining. Then from the point of view around access to funding. So predominantly where it's just high net worths, now these syndicates getting together and building like Afterwork Ventures or the Black Angels over here, and these angel groups that are really leveling the playing field for all to get involved in investing in startups.
The last question I have, not really a question, I want to give you a few minutes to just share something that's, you know, important to you, that's on the top of your head. Keeping in mind that I'm trying to create a documentary here that will really tell the story of the Australian startup ecosystem. We want policymakers, academics, founders, investors, people from all corners of the ecosystem to hear this story. What would you want to tell them? Any one of those categories or all of them, what's the message that, you know, they need to hear from Les?
The message I'd say is, that talent is widely distributed, opportunity is not. So if we can help level that playing field and make it easier for all to access to become an entrepreneur, and government being that enabler to support that, but obviously access to capital, that's one significant aspect. I think we look at Harlem Capital in the US, a very small, it's the ecosystem of what's being built right now, but it's such an incredible, important ecosystem where it started from $2 million and built a $200 million fund just of a bunch of African-American founders. So the support that is, I think is needed right now is then leveling the playing field for all to get into this space. Predominantly it was for high net worths from an investment point of view. And then this is an opportunity right now, and is really quite timely, that leveling the playing field from being just a sophisticated investor exclusive to those high net worths to then for everyone to be a part of this change. Startups then create significant change, and we're seeing like the programs we're running is impact, social impact. We know a lot of startups then create impact in the community, and predominantly social impact. It's not just for the profit, it's not just for the dollar, and it's not just for a ticking a box for a CSR target. It's actually tangible change that the startup ecosystem is creating, and that's whether that's Indigenous startups or female founder led startups in general across the entire country. It's this, the makeup of this ecosystem, that is really needs in terms of leveling the playing field and accessing investment.
I hope you enjoyed that interview. More interviews are on the way. Follow the podcast wherever you're listening right now. Stay tuned for more interviews with many, many more amazing people from the Australian startup ecosystem. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.